This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast.
Franz, welcome to the podcast. I am so stoked that you guys are willing to spend your Friday night talking to me. Before I pass it over, I just want to say that this is going to be a special episode where we really dive into Mike and his work at Staub Audio Engineering. And Franz and me, we have Mike is what we is what we share in common. We're both music producers and artists, and we both utilize Mike for his audio engineering skills. And for people that have listened to the podcast before, Mike has been on two times, and I talk about Mike almost every single episode because I feel so lucky to have such a talented audio engineer that I get to trust with my final mix and master, and it makes the creation process a little bit easier for me. So before we dive into some of the mixing and mastering specific questions, I just want to turn it over to both of you to give a quick introduction on who you are and what you guys do. And Mike, let's start with you.
Hi, Cody. Thanks a lot for having me in your podcast once more. My name is Mike. I'm the founder of Staub Audio Engineering. I'm a mixing and mastering engineer, mainly mastering, located in Austria, Vienna, in the suburbs of Vienna. And me and Cody, we're working a lot of times together in the past. I did a lot of albums of him. And also Franz is a client of mine. So we thought this would be a lovely opportunity to speak a little more in depth about artist-engineer relationship and so on. And yeah, thanks a lot for the nice and kind words, Cody, as always. I need to give those back because, as you know, in my opinion, you're very talented and lovely producer. So it's my honor to have the opportunity to work with you.
Oh, Mike, you're making me blush. You're making me blush, man. Franz, who are you, man? Who are you and what do you do and where are you based out of?
Hey, Cody. First of all, thank you very much for the possibility to be here. Not for the invitation, because this came from Mike. Thank you, Mike. You told me you are looking for someone who is not a professional in the area of mix and mastering, so I'm a perfect fit. I'm from Switzerland, a music producer. I make music for about 15 to 20 years, but releasing beats under the name Franz is since 3 or 4 years right now. I work 100%. It's not my job, music. It's my passion. I'm always very happy to have Mike in my team, in my back, because when I send him something, I'm just relaxed because I know the product will be great. And if it's not, then it's my fault that I had a strange track that I sent him.
There are no strange tracks.
Franz, I'm stoked that you're joining us, man. And I think we should probably do a solo episode at some point so we can really dive into your story and what got you into music. So after the episode, let's talk about that and we'll get you back on, man.
cool.
And similarly to you, I am certainly not a professional when it comes to mixing and mastering. Since I first joined the Beats community, I was introduced to Mike essentially right away through Wilczynski, who I'm fortunate enough to have collaborated with as soon as I joined the Lo-Fi Beats community. So Mike has had my back since day one, which I've been spoiled for. And then before entering the Lo-Fi Beats community, I primarily produced electronic music, and I still produce and perform electronic music. But my collaborator for my project, Crystal Grid, he's an audio engineer nerd as well. So I've been spoiled to be able to default the mixing and mastering details to both Mike and my buddy Jared. So I'm certainly not a professional by any means, but I love what you said about being relaxed when you send your tracks to Mike. And I couldn't agree more, because as soon as I send either a wave or some grouped stems, I have peace of mind. Like, as soon as I ship it off, I'm fully confident that I'm done. You know, I'm done. I'm just waiting for Mike to send back the final product, and I know it's going to be good. So I feel super lucky.
And
so,
this is also a very, very convenient thing for the engineer, that the artist is, you know, is accepting his work to be done and giving the work, because this is also, you know, for the mastering engineer, it's lovely to have the opportunity to kind of make the stamp on the sound, and the artist wants this stamp on the sound. It's not the only possibility an artist is booking you. The other way would be that he's unsure with his own stuff, and maybe he tries to get another second direction. And this is also another approach I have often to deal with. So with you both, it's like also for me a very, very creative process, because I have the full confidence that whatever I do and which direction I go, I will have your improvement, because you like or you prefer this distinct sound I give to the tracks. And it's not always like that. Sometimes it's not the distinct sound people want, but they want a new direction, and they want a kind of workaround. With you, it's like my creative work starts and then it finishes, and the whole product is finished. But it's not always like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and musicians are not known basically for their reliability. And it's a super thing that whenever I send you something, you say, hey, 2 days, if it's enough, I can earlier, and it's always just right on time, and that's great. And it's one thing to find somebody who has good skills in the area of mix and mastering, but it's another thing to find somebody who knows how it has to sound. Maybe it's great, maybe it's clean and everything, but it just sounds not the way that it's meant to be. And yeah, it's always cool that when you
so
do
much.
it has this warmth, it has this authenticity, and this is really, really hard to find.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. I mean, the reliability thing is super important, but I recognized in the latest times that more and more musicians are also getting much more reliable due to Spotify release dates and schedules and everything, and the labels are very much behind it. And but reliability is superbly important, maybe one of the most important things for being an engineer, and also to be very flexible, because sometimes there are like 30 clients at once wanting a track in 2 days done or something, then you really need to reschedule and restructure your whole day. And this is a very big thing for me also. So it's not only having the work done, but also being a Dienstleister, we call it in Germany. I don't know the word in English.
Well, I think it... Well, you just exude not only the creativity, but the professionalism. And that's something that probably over the past like year or 2 years I've gotten better at, but it took me a long time to even realize that it was a problem of just overscheduling myself and just having a belief that I was going to be able to get everything done, you know, when it's like, this is an impossible task that you're setting for yourself. Yeah. So that's something that I've been able to learn. Maybe that's just maturing. Maybe that's just growing up. That's part of it.
But Mike, one really important point I always tell all my clients, don't get too mature as a producer to not have your creative perspective altered, because there are so many producers lately who are like, oh my God, I need to take this compressor, and Mike, do you know, is this plugin better than that plugin, and so on. And they really dive into this thing and they lose their creativity they need for composing and such. So for me, it's like sheer impossible to get back to being a producer because I have this professional perspective. But I always tell the artists, you know, your asset is creativity, and this must be your number one thing you need to be there for. You know what I mean? So just to say this, yeah, don't get too professional as an artist. Mm.
What do you guys think? The stress or the deadlines, is this something it only pushes you and gives you the power? Or sometimes it makes the opposite, because a creative process, you can't plan a creative process. And when my label asks, can you finish the tracks until this date? I think, yeah, maybe, maybe not. I can't say. What do you think about this topic?
That's, man, what a great question. And I think that's such a great question. Fortunately, I haven't had to work under pressure for a deadline in a while, just because I've been fortunate enough to be so far ahead, which is mostly in part due to my awesome collaborators, for sure. Most of my projects are collaborations, so it wasn't just me alone working hard enough to get ahead. It was a lot of talented people around me. But in that regards, I think I have a little bit different approach to my writing process. And I wake up at 5 a.m. every single day, and the first thing that I do is make music. And so from 5 a.m. to 8 a.m., the only thing, like, I don't check emails, I don't check phone, I don't check DMs. All I do from 5 to 8 is produce, and maybe for like 10-minute breaks or 15-minute breaks, I'll journal or I'll read. But that's almost the 3 hours of my day. It's almost like a self-imposed deadline that I do at least 5 days a week, which I think is interesting. So it's not it's forced creativity in the sense that I do it every single day. But there's something about that morning period for me, man, like when my day isn't influenced by anything, that it just works like every time, which is strange. And that's been my process for like probably three, maybe even 4 years at this point. And I guess it's just like the magic formula for me, where like every morning something happens. It's incredible.
Yeah, maybe for creative processes, you just have to have way enough time or invest way too much time in the task so you can be sure that you can make this deadline. But yeah, how I said, I work 100%, and maybe sometimes it's really a challenge. And at the same time, I just want to disappoint the people that I work with. When I say, oh man, I need some days more, because they always need time to schedule the release and make the covers and everything. And I don't want to be that person who fails in the timetable.
Yeah, well, and I should note, yeah, I'm lucky that I'm pursuing music full time, and I'm sure balancing a full time position is brutal. that's a lot of work. And even because you do it, and you said you do it because it's your passion, but still, as soon as you put a deadline on it, then it becomes, you know, passion that has a deadline.
Yeah. Exactly. What about you, Mike? Your process is also a creative process.
Yeah.
What do you think about it?
It's a little vice versa. It's funny because when Cody told now the first thing he does is making music, I thought it would be sports with Cody. But I guess the sport is afterwards. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It is. Yeah. I thought like that. So I'm making too less sport. This is the problem. But now for me, it works like I'm waking up and I'm turning my mobile on, not on flight mode. It's flight mode canceled, and then it goes like ding 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 ding. It goes like, you know, 40 messages or something like that. And the first thing I do in the morning is checking out messages, answering people, and having client communication. The really big thing about my work is that really half of the time I'm in work, I do client communication, and the other half is mastering, because client communication is such tremendously important. And there are possibilities for my colleagues to have it vice versa. They have like a fill form on the webpage, and no one ever talks to the mastering engineer as such. But this is not my approach, and I try to talk to everyone in person, and it gets way over my head sometimes. This is totally true, but I really try to stay in.
I love your voice messages.
Yeah.
I love your voice messages when we hear your child and your wife.
Yeah, this is not always possible another way, because, you know, yeah, it's like that. But I really try to answer it kind of immediately or within a day, just to have the artist assured that I care, you know. It's like real like that, and it's also a lot of that is having a good communication. And after that, I begin my mastering process, sit down, and it's a strange thing. Sometimes there are tracks that are really needing much attention, and then I don't have a, you know, like a schedule. Now I need to do this track, then 1 hour later this track. But every track needs its time, and it gets its time. And if not, the other day, the things that are leftovers get like edited. So it's like this is my normal work process. So my whole day, my whole life is extremely scheduled. It's extremely scheduled. But the creative process of mastering is like not scheduled. It's not like I take half an hour for this track and then I take half an hour for this track. This is impossible. And sometimes it's like you begin an album. For example, I do a new album for Urban Waves now, and today I was doing that album, and sometimes I begin the album and do three or four tracks, and those are really hard, you know, you get into stuff, and after the fifth track, you know what, you know the direction, and then you the other tracks like in half of the time. So it's like not always the same process. Mm. It differs a lot.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's a... first, yeah, your voice messages and your client communication is superb. I'm always baffled on the timeliness of your responses. I'm like, Mike is on it, and that
you make my day, Cody, because sometimes from the client you get voice messages like, hey Mike, the track, you know, I try to have it like fixed, but I don't know, maybe. And you, when you get to me, it's like, hey Mike, what's up? How was your day? And it was always like a burst of energy drink directly in your head. So it's like a wake up call for all the neurons, you know.
Yeah. Well, it probably helps that it's typically morning when I'm responding. Yeah, it's probably the end of your work day, and I've just had like three cups of coffee. Yeah, yeah. So I'm ready to go.
The time gap is funny because my whole biorhythm is going down and your biorhythm is starting. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that, Mike. I'll be sure to remember that. And it Well, and even just the communication that you have, like I've never gotten a track back where you're just like, oh, it's finished. Like you explain exactly what you did. And you also, when it's needed, you provide crucial feedback. And it was, I mean, I think it was like 6 months ago when you suggested that I really allowed the solo instruments to shine. And with my project with Dreamfield and Kelly, who's just an incredible instrumentalist and guitarist, and there's so many call and responses between different solo instruments where when I balance my production between future bass and dubstep to lo-fi and chill hop. And sometimes I think sometimes I try to over mask or over smooth the lo-fi and chill hop tracks. And you were able to point that out and you were like, hey man, like let those solos like really shine. They're solos. Let them, let them be the main focus of the mix. And that was something that I needed to hear so badly that I never would have caught on my own. And I think ever since you said that, like when I listen back to the tunes that I've released in the past 6 months, hearing those instruments shine, I can just think of you and I'm like, oh, thank God he told me that. You know, like that, it was such an important thing for me to recognize and to learn.
Yeah, this is a very common thing in producers also, because I always compare it with the vocalists or rap musicians. There are so many vocalists that don't have a compressor or such in the chain, in the recording chain, and they kind of lower their voice, you know, they try to be their own compressor in some kind of way. So they make compromises with the voice because they know when it's raw, it sounds like shit and over exhausted in some kind of way. And it's the same with producers. You don't have in mind the whole process I do typically on your solo parts. And this gets us furthermore to the next thing, because normally in mastering, there could be bus mastering where not everything is sliced and so on. But with me, I do slice several parts of the tracks. I do automate them to give them some closer look on several parts. So it's like doing stem mastering on your solo parts means that I have the full control on your solo parts. So it's like I said before, don't correct yourself creatively, because it will be my job to make your creative vision shine. And when it's too harsh, then it will get done by me. So this was the thing with your tracks, because they were so lovely, and the solo parts, they were like you had always the thought in mind, oh, maybe I don't do them to them to a certain extent, because then it gets harsh or it gets unpleasant and such. And when you corrected that, that meant that I had the possibility to work on those solo parts now on a whole nother perspective, and it was very beneficial. So just for the explanation for the listeners, sometimes it's like the creative process needs to be the holy grail for the composer and for the producer, and other thoughts they have in mind sound-wise could be very hindly, could be very decreasing the creative output.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes I think the more I know about mixing and stuff, the harder it gets to finish a track because it's harder to be satisfied. And maybe you try your new plugin which you bought and you're basically make it worse than better. And when I started producing, I was just with the Machine Studio and some Logitech hi-fi boxes, so quality very 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 low, but I was much faster in finishing my tracks because I just worried about the creative aspects, not on the sound quality and these frequencies just not masking these frequencies. And yeah, the longer I produce, the longer I have to finish my tracks.
That's a very, very good point and an interesting point. And I've been having conversations with some people lately in regards to just my production style, where it's almost becoming more simple, and it's getting better because of it. And I think that was as I was learning about all of these new effect racks and like just trying to add as much as like having 10 effects, you know, on a rack and just continuously adding more. And then I got to a point where it was kind of like a hard stop, and it was like, how simple can I make a tune? And honestly, that's like, for me, I was like, I think this is starting to sound better. And I think having too much knowledge can almost be, paralyzing in that sense, especially if you're double checking, if you're referencing audio tools visually, and you're like, it sounds good, but it doesn't make sense on this visual tool. And, that used to trip me up, and I guess I haven't done that for a long time. Once again, I'm lucky because
this is also a really good idea, because it's a very big mistake when people think we as engineers, we look always on analyzers and such. This is really much not true. We use analyzers, and there's a final stage in mastering where the technical aspects of a track are becoming very much important, for example for streaming, true peak level and dynamics and LOFS and EBO norms and so on. But the most part is a creative part, and it's about listening and about sound, and analyzers are very, very complicated things. Also the translation from audio into visual, those are like, it's not like dogmatic, it's like a very fluent mathematical thing, and it's you always need to keep that in mind. And there have been clients of mine who told me, oh my god, I can't finish the track because the visualizer shows like too many frequencies above 60 hertz or something like that. And I told them, oh man, but does it sound cool? because it there is no norm or something like that. There have been so much discussion, for example, regarding vinyl to have a low end roll off, and there are so many people who are preaching this bullshit till now. And I'm in constant talks also with Tom from Rand Music, who is a very, very incredible, talented cutting engineer. And we talked a lot about that also. And it's like, the machines aren't as dogmatic as people tend to be when they inform themselves in the internet about something. Mm. It's not like that. And it's also not like that regarding those LOFS EBU norms. You can't imagine how many clients of mine are coming to me and asking me. Per day, I can say I have 3 people asking me, oh, if they need minus 14 LOFS on Spotify. So I tend to get some AI generated voice message to get them back with always the same answer, because it's like, it's always the same questions, and there's so much thing around in the internet that no professional mastering engineer is working like that. It's strange. It's really strange, but things tend to get, told by people, and then the other one are telling the same myths about being professional in some regard. And the most important thing of being professional is sounding professional. And sound is an audio thing and not a visual thing by any analysis or such. So, yeah.
Mm. I think, Mike, Preach. That's a, man, what an interesting point. Cause I first got into music production in 2014. And at that time it was standard in the electronic community, or at least the people that I was talking to, and whatever resources I was learning from, it was standard to find an audio engineer for final mastering. And so that's the era that I grew up in, where I was always like, yeah, I'm going to send it off to a mastering engineer to allow them to master the track. And I think it's probably been in the past, what, like 4 or 5 years, where I think everybody's trying to become a mastering engineer. Or I guess when I share conversation with people where they're like, yeah, I'll master it. And I'm like, well, why don't we use an audio engineer, you know, like how long have you been mastering tracks is the answer is like not long. And it's, all,
or they do it just SoundCloud.
Totally. Yeah. AI mastering. And it's, so I guess, that might be just a generational, phenomena where people want to become both the music producer and the audio engineer, which I mean, in a sense, you mix as you go, right? Like there's certainly elements that complement each other, but I guess it's also
okay to do so. It's, I always also have been another opinion than many of my colleagues who say that one cannot master by itself. It's possible for sure. And I see myself not only as a mastering engineer who's like a correction form of any kind, but also like a collaborator on your track, to have another opinion, to have a very, very experienced opinion on translation of music, because I do this since 20 years and have done like 500 plus vinyls. I know how stuff translates, and this is my asset in some kind of regard. But it's totally possible to have your own music masters via Ozone or such, and that it sounds okay. It's also very much possible that it doesn't, but it's not my, you know, I'm no correction like preaching some marketing stuff that everyone needs to have it mastered because it's professional. No, it's not only like that. It's also to have a collaborator who is very experienced on your tracks, and also who has like a kind of perfect listening environment, and who is like having very much experience in translation. But when you master your own tracks and when you do stuff, it's important to sort between, or to like differentiate between the much bullshit that is out there on the internet and the real important informations. This is superbly hard, because so many people, they do like electronic tracks with minus 14 LUFS, and then they tell me why there's no compression punch. And yeah, because they're like, it's dynamic now. So it's like people have kind of an opinion on some things like dynamics, but they don't have the knowledge what's behind of that, and that a track needs sometimes dynamic processing, even though it's not important for the loudness, but it's just the style and the character of the genre, and that it's also important like that. So we as mastering engineers, we don't think always about how many LOFS does it need now, and I don't have a list with lofi hip hop minus 12 LOFS and electronic minus 10 LOFS or whatever. We don't have a list, but we kind of know from experience what genre needs what stuff for the mastering. And another very important thing is also that not each and every track is also capable of being so much like dynamic or so much compressed. It sometimes a track reaches also its loudness potential production wise, and then it's not like it has no benefit to make it like minus 6 LOFS when there's still a lot of low end involved. It won't be as punchy after the normalization process as it would be a modern hip hop track in some regard. So it's a very complicated thing, and we as engineers, we do a lot of research, and we try to educate ourselves a lot, going on congresses and on gatherings between colleagues and so on. So Sometimes it's very, very scary how much misinformation is out there in the internet.
I love what you said about you being another collaborator. And that's exactly how I feel, and especially in recently with a lot of the Dreamfield tracks, it's myself, it's Kelly, and then another collaborator like Bubble, Paul. and then, you know, I get final mixdown approval from Kelly and Paul, and then I know I get to send it to you for that, for just the finishing touches, man. And it's like you do add character and you add soul and you add emotion to that final master. Everybody that collaborates with Dreamfield and chooses to utilize your mastering services, they're always blown away. They're like, this track, like it's you keep the essence of the original track, but you just make it better. You know, like
yeah, that's
in most in the most simple, that's the simplest way to describe it is we send you a good tune and then you just make it better. like that's really the most simplified version of our working relationship. But it is, and for somebody like me that doesn't have the technical knowledge, it's that feeling. It's what I'm hearing, and just hearing whatever that emotion and character and warmth that you added, it's just a feeling that I get when I'm listening back through it. And I guess we've worked together for enough tracks at this point where it's like I just have full trust that I whenever I get the song back and I listen to it, I'm like, yep, there's Mike. You know, like there's Mike's addition. It totally is. It's like when you collaborate with another artist, you begin to hear their style and their vibe and their sound, and you can pick out or at least hear and feel whatever they added. And I feel the exact same way about you, of like having a final mix down on my end and it sounds good, and I hear myself, I hear Kelly, I hear our collaborator, and then I send it to you, and once I get that mastered version back, it's like, and there's the final missing piece, and there's Mike, and now we have a full track. And I feel lucky, man. It's almost like cheating, it feels like, to be honest, like with how good the tracks come out. Like I get them back and I'm like, wow, this like this tune is unbelievable.
Oh, thank you so much about your kind words, and this is the best and the optimum situation also for the mastering engineer, because I can add my style on the tracks. It's not always like that. Sometimes it's also an artist just wishes to have his exact like thing louder, but those are like the minor. It's maybe 1%. People tend to come to me for my sound and for the things they know from me. You know, they have a vinyl collection of vinyls that I have mastered in the past, or they kind of know it from another producer or such. But people tend to come to me because they want Staub Audio Engineering on their music. And many mastering engineers see it vice versa. They just really want to do their technical flattening stuff. And it's not like that with me. And sometimes I also, sometimes when we do vinyl, for example, and this is maybe also the reason why I kind of send you those voice messages, because I get hooked on the tracks by myself. You know, when I send you stuff back, I tell you, oh, Cody, the track is so dope. It's the same with France. We did a track some time ago with a very kind of famous singer from Switzerland. And I just asked him today how the name was of this guy, because I was so hooked on the track. And there's so many tracks who are like catching me. And then when I give the track back, then I say, "Oh, Cody, here it is." So just to say that. Mm-hmm. But there are so many mastering engineers who just want to flatten stuff, and this is also possible. But this is not where my heart is. My heart is at mm-hmm. the possibility to add something to the vibe and to add something to the tracks and to get it on the next level, to sound it more, to let it sound more jazzy, to like saturation is I guess the big thing for me, because I work much with analog gear also, but I really keep the stuff for me that is doing the saturation thing, that adds some saturation, some harmonics to some degree. The other things I can also do in the box. The other things I can also do like with processing and visuals and such. But this is something I really love to do. I really like to enhance it harmonical wise. This is like, and this is what blows the people away, because they get something back that wasn't in it before. And this is the catchy thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember one time it said to you, "Hey, if you hear some missing reverb somewhere or a delay or something, then feel free to put it in." And you told me, "No, I don't want to interact too much with the track. I just want to let it shine, but I don't want to co-create it. So where do you draw the line between be this service provider you said and the collaborator on the track?
Yeah, this is a really good question. The line is normally when I have a new client, the line is normally that I do the mastering stuff, the kind of technical stuff and the saturation stuff, but I don't go in so deep into sound creation, because in my opinion, this is the work of the artist. And it's not only the work of the artist, but it's today it's like artists have so many possibilities, and they tend to want to do the reverberation and the those stuff. They kind of tend to do it by themselves. But if the client asks for it, I'm totally fine with it. I love to do that. Also in the mixing stage, I do a lot of like effecting in that case. But those are like the kind of effects people tend to do by themselves during the production stage nowadays. So as a mastering engineer, it's not my like kind of prime objective to act like that. Because if I would do it in a kind of normal case, people will tell me, "Oh, it's like you're altering my music." And I don't want to alter the music. I want to kind of enhance the vision the artist had. So, yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. But when you asked me, I said, surely I can do so. But it's not my my main thing.
No, I but if you would say, "Hey, Franz, I have one idea. Maybe this would become great." Then now I would always say, go for it. Just show it. Because in every single case, not only with you, also with graphic designers and stuff, I hate to restrict them. Like, just in this area, you can act and everything else is not allowed. No, if I like this artist or this designer or this producer or mastering engineer, I want to give him this freedom of bring yourself in, like, because I trust you and I like you and I like what I do. Mm. So this is the reason that I think feel free, but not it don't has to be, but if someone has an idea and want to apply it on it, I would never say don't do it.
Franz, that was what a great question. It's in regards to figuring out what where is that line, and I'm sure it comes with the relationship over time. Which I think, man, I guess I think I when I first met you, Mike, I just it was. Wilkshinsky was the one that he was just like, "Hey man, this is my guy." And that was and I think it's been like 3 years. So we've, I think
yeah,
maybe,
three and a half or something. I think we did over 100 songs now together, kind of way over 100 songs. Yeah, I guess so.
Wow.
Didn't we?
Yeah, probably, man. Yeah. Wow, I can't believe it. Wow, that's incredible. Well, and it's, so expanding on France's point a little bit, like what, I guess how difficult is it when you're listening to a song and if you hear a creative idea, you know, just like, wow, if there was like one melodic fill right here, this track could be great. Like how do you sometimes make those suggestions or do you try to separate yourself from even saying that? And I guess it'd be like maybe if relating it to me as a saxophonist, if I was hearing saxophone tracks all day, I would have to imagine sometimes I would listen to a melody and be like, ooh, I would play it. I would do it this way. how do you find that balance?
Yeah, man? I mean, it's maybe I try to give some hints to clients I work with often, as I did with your solos, for example. But there need to be a connection of trust established before. And normally, I see myself as a creator only of the sound wise parts, so not of the production parts, because I have a deep respect also for all clients I work with, because they're great and incredible talented genius composers as Franz, and I don't see myself as being as talented, but I see myself in the professional field of the sound field, and there is where my opinion gets important and relevant. But normally I also don't tend to tell people, oh, I'm now in the mastering stage and but you could have made those and those points better. But I really try to better what they have. So it's like sometimes I get the superbly quality of sound-wise. I get superbly quality of very, very established producers, and I enhance their music. But I also enhance the music of not so perfect like producers, and it's not my point to have them in any form critiqued for where they are now in their production life, because maybe it's an asset of them and maybe it's an distinct kind of vision or sound they have, and I'm not in the position to get myself involved in this creative process. It's really like to add it in my fashion sound-wise and to make the best out of what I get. Sometimes I get really, I'm a hip-hop head by myself. I have made a lot of, I've done, I was very much involved with the hip-hop, jazz and lofi scene and so on. So I consider myself to have quite a strong opinion on stuff. And there are sometimes stuff that I wouldn't prefer musically. But when I have it in my hands and when I can enhance it to a certain degree, each and every track for me sounds dope. It's like because of the enhancement and of the possibilities I had to enhance the tracks, it gets pleasant for me. And so it's like this is my way of thinking about it. I don't have any critique. This is also now why I'm paid for it, to have my critiques on someone's music. Also not to tell them that it's like worse in kind of technical aspects or something. Mm. Because my job is to make also not so pleasant technical stuff sounding perfect or nearly perfect. Wow. And but there are some ways I try to enhance, or I try to tell people, is when it's stem mastering is involved. So there are some bus mixes I get where I can hear that a stem mastering approach would be superbly beneficial. And then I tell that. Mm-hmm. Then I say, look, I can make this sound this track shine to a certain degree in the bus stage, but I could make it shine a lot more in the stem mastering stage where I can really get into mixing and, you know, into blending and mm-hmm. like FX and drums separately and so on. So this is this I consider that as my job, but not to be anyway critiquing the music of people. And I work with so many incredible genius people. It's really like I could never have this stage of being a producer myself. So for me, each and sometimes I get tracks where I'm like, oh my God, they trust me with those like this is incredible. And I still kept the passion for incredible music. So sometimes I sit in front of music and I say, oh, I master it now, but this is like, oh my God. And I smile, you know, it's like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think you don't have to be talented as the artist to give something worthy as an idea to him. Maybe an 8-year-old who never made music himself can make this one idea who makes the track perfect. So it doesn't matter from where this idea comes, as long as you like it and you imply it.
You're right, but it's like this is maybe also the problematic thing nowadays. Everyone thinks he's in the position of having like the critique point because everyone is selling himself. It is forced to sell himself nowadays as to be the professional anchor for opinion. You know, people like mastering engineers or each and everyone who is like...
Mike, you're talking to somebody that has a podcast, so I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, no, but you know, each and everyone is like consulting nowadays, and I'm not in a consulting position. I don't see myself as being in any better or any more knowledgeable position as an artist regarding the creative process and regarding his music. I am maybe in technical aspects and my experience as a mastering engineer and translation of music, but I'm not like I could perfectly fail when I would have heard Billie Eilish 7 years ago. I could maybe had said, oh, please enhance the mid end because it's like diving in lower end, you know, and it's like and it's like if you're here the Billie Eilish album, you hear at the low end is like a distortion because there's a heavy amount of limiting on a very unbalanced, like frequency wise, track. And some engineer could say, have the mix redone or something, and you see. But this it created a new sound, it created a new style, it created like a movement of sound. And so, we shouldn't consider something as right and wrong because in music, it's all about like invention and new ideas and new sound and so on.
That was what an evolved perspective. And I was trying to just think about myself, and I don't know if I could keep myself I feel like I would probably inject my opinion too much if I was in your shoes, which, like you said, is probably not a good thing, potentially. And yeah, so I just the perspective that you just shared is I think it's admirable, and I'm trying to think of where in my life I could draw that separation and really define what my response where. What is my creative responsibility? What complements my skill set? Like I don't know, man. I was pretty blown away by your ability to kind of distinguish where you're at. And then just like you said with the Billie Eilish thing, and even so, Skrillex just dropped two albums, and Jared, my partner in Crystal Grid, he, you know, I sent him one of the tracks that was one of my favorites off the album, and he's like, "Wow, so we're not cutting 250 hertz anymore, huh?" and I didn't even listen to it from the engineering perspective, but he yeah. did. He was like, "Wow, that yeah. like there is yeah. a lot of mud there." But for me, I was like, "Wow, this track sounds phenomenal." Regardless of the yeah. 250. Yeah. Hertz
I guess
mud,
there's so. Also a difference between people doing a certain style because they are aware of, and people who are not aware and have a bad listening environment. There's also, but as being an engineer, you get a very good feeling for that over the time. If people wanted to sound like that, because they want to have this kind of distinct sound, or if they're like if their environment or their production techniques aren't able to do something, you get a very strong feeling for that.
Yeah, you have such an inside look at the creators' minds. Like, wow, what a Like for me and via Summit One and Dreamfield, like if 100 plus tracks, you know, like you might know my style better than I know my style. To be honest, you know, like that's wow, what a cool relationship to have with people's music.
Yeah, you got a feeling of what people want with Franz. It's also like that because he trusted me and. Extreme lot with his mixes also. So he was like really, he sent me the stuff and he said, do your thing on that. And yeah. To have this possibility, there I really consider myself to be a co-creator in some kind of way. And I know where he kind of wants to go, but he wasn't able because of the environment he produces, maybe, or you know, you get a feeling about that, and it's really my goal to encourage people into being a creative person and not to be an engineer so much. Because as we talked before with Franz, before the podcast, we talked a little and he told me, oh, he has a studio space and it's lovely and he feels well in there. You know, and so this is the most important thing. So when I tell a client, how should your studio be? I would always tell him it's a place where you can be totally and perfectly creative and where you feel good. And I love my studio also, but this is built on a whole other idea also, to be very neutral sound and to be like an analyzer for music in some kind of regard. And but for the creative person, it's the most and most important thing is that they feel creative in their space. So you know what I mean. Mm-hmm.
I think it's definitely a benefit if someone has this deep knowledge of what has to be done after the production process in the mixing and mastering. So, for example, Tennyson, on some tracks of him, it's so crazy how the different elements, they are, I think they are picked by the frequencies and by the, he hears when he picks or designs the sounds, what he can do with it. And how they will harmonize with each other. And maybe this ability is missing to me because I don't really know what has to be done after I produced the track, and how can I make your life easier with providing you or thinking on specific parts of the production. Yeah, like masking, like it starts by the selection of the sounds. If they can't work with each other, if they, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I totally know, and it's so funny and also kind of important what you said about to make your life easier as a mastering engineer, because I hear this so much. I hear this such a lot when they tell me, "Oh, Mike, could you tell me what I can do to make your work like easier?" And that is not the goal, man. It's like you do your creative work in a way that I could never do it. And who am I who has like the right to tell you that you should kind of in some regards alter your baby, your music to make my life easier? It's really not like that. It's like your creative work is the basis of what I can do, and being a creative mind by yourself is my without that all my mastering would be for nothing. All I can make a shit sound golden, but it still is shit. You know what I mean? So I guess what you shouldn't lose as a mastering engineer, and this is a very profound and important thing, is the respect and the love for the creative work of the artist. Because I admire that, and because I'm not the guy who is like that also. And as I was a producer before, I was never in this extent, because I was always overthinking something like sound, like the technical aspects, and I was really a nerd into this. And I totally and strongly admire a creative mind who is capable of being just creative. This is like, for me, I have just a lot of admiration for artists, and this is a very, very good basis for being a mastering engineer, because it's not your enemy; it should be your like colleague on that, and
sparing partner.
Yeah. And for me, the artist is just, I admire what they do. For me, they create incredible music I could never create by myself. So I'm a fan of my clients also in the most cases. Mm.
Maybe naming the tracks would help, no?
Well, hey, and fellas, I think we do have some specific questions that were asked by individuals from Mike's community that I want to dive into, and I loved how free flowing this conversation went. So I think the best move is going to be to split these episodes into a part one and a part two. So I think wrapping this episode up right now is part one, and we can start up another episode and really dive into these specific questions, which I neglected to ask because we were just having such a good time. I think is probably going to be the move. So for the sake of podcast formatting, can both of you guys just say where people can go to reach out to both of you, and then we'll start up part number two.
Franz?
This is not so easy because of my name. If you just type in Franz, you will find a lot, but not me. But you will basically, if you find good enough, you will find me on every platform like YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, and etc. The label is OK Wow. And maybe if you search both, you will find the right Franz.
Awesome. And I will put direct links in the description of the episode. So for people that are tuning in, just go to the episode description, click it, and you're gonna get to where you need to go. Mike?
Before I tell you my contact information, I will I want to also repeat once more the label of France. It's called OK Wow. It's a Swiss label, and it's an incredible, great lo-fi label which I work with for like 4 or 5 years, and they trust me with many projects. So greetings to there, and check out OK Wow music also in the internet. And my contact data is staubaudioengineering.com. There you can find my webpage and also contact information. And please feel free to add me on Instagram or Facebook. Facebook, Mike Steril von Weidinger, and Instagram, Staub Audio Steril One, I guess. I don't have the name recalled, but it's lovely when you send me an email via the webpage and then contact me via social media, because there you will get a voice message by me, and then we can start the working process via that, and we can be always in contact via social media. So this is the most pleasant way for me and for you.
And getting a voice message from Mike is the highlight of my day. So definitely go to Facebook and send that voice message. And get ready for part number two. We're going to dive into some more detailed and specific questions that were asked by individuals from Mike's community who have, once again, specific questions regarding mixing and mastering. So I think we're going to get a little bit nerdier on this next episode.
This will be so lovely. I'm so much looking forward, Cody.
Yep. So everybody click part two right now.